We watched the OA.
Nope. Done. I'm out.
I think it's done anyway.
I'm out. There's a couple words that she says a lot in this season. Like, his name is Kareem. And she's like, cream, like what you put in your coffee. And she just kept saying it in the one episode, cream, cream. And I'm like, no. What kind of accent is calling a motherfucker cream? Oh, you know,
suburb.
Kareem Abdul-Jabbar. No, I'm sorry. That's not it. You wrote it. Don't write a name you can't say. Make his name Carl.
Carl.
End of OA rant. What's up? This is Movies On Up. His bark isn't half as bad as his bite. The man that will be barking for the next 30 minutes is seated right across from me. As usual, that is Mr. Dave Becella.
Woof, woof.
That's Mr. Dave, the big dog. I am Ryan. We are Movies On Up. His bark isn't half as bad as his bite is our tagline for this week. If you think you know what movie that comes from, you can send your guest to us in one of the following ways. You can email us, moviesonup@gmail.com. You can leave your guests on our Facebook page, which is at facebook.com/moviesonup, or you can tweet your guest to us at moviesonup on the Twitter. If you are correct and if we choose you, your dog may be barking as the mailman is walking up to your porch with a Movies On Up prize package. That is just how easy it can be. This week, a dog's journey, a dog's journey. I think that's it. It's the loose sequel to A Dog's Purpose from a couple years ago.
Which is to die.
Yes, which is to die many, many times. And if it's anything like that, I think several of the dog's journeys in this movie will end horribly in death. But that got us to thinking, actually, two things. So The Dog's Journey, which is a movie about a dog, and then John Wick Chapter 3 Parabellum, which does not prominently feature a dog, although the John Wick trilogy to this point, the John Wick
would not
EU,
exist without that
right
dog.
Would not exist without the, spoiler alert, untimely death of Daisy the dog. So that got Dave to thinking about our favorite movies, not necessarily starring dogs, but where dogs are integral to the plot, which I think is pretty straightforward. I'm not sure how much room for maneuvering there was in there. I mean, I would say that...
We'll see.
Okay, so you...
No, I mean... I can justify it.
Fair enough.
The only iffy one is maybe my number one, but
no,
I can justify
that's a good
it.
One to be iffy. Yeah, mine, in many cases, there are several dogs, so I don't think you're going to argue with any of my picks. But let's go ahead and get into the picks. Dave, what is the fifth pick of the litter for you?
My number five, I do not have to sell.
Okay.
It's pretty apparent from 2018. Directed by Ken Marino, written by his wife, Erica Oyama, and a couple other people. It is Dog Days. It's one of those interconnected people movies that the whole thing bringing them together is their love for their dogs. The cast is ridiculous. I don't even want to start listing it because everybody in this movie rules. Tone Bell is like one of the dudes in this that I didn't know who that was. He's one of the only people to show up on screen not be like, oh, hey, Rob Corddry. But he was really, really good. Like, he showed up in this movie of all these people that I love and probably gave the best performance. It's just a lot of fun. It's not the Ken Marino that I love. You know, it's not Dip Your Balls in It, but he did a really good job tying this movie together. It's very emotional. It's fun. It's just, nowadays, the world is such a shit show and we're all going to die that sometimes it's nice to just watch a movie and just think like, well, that felt good. Dog Days is one of those.
The world is a shit show, and we are all going to die in the apocalypse. So my number five is a post-apocalyptic movie from 1975.
You're stealing my number two.
I am stealing your number two. It is L.Q. Jones's A Boy and His Dog, starring Don Johnson, Suzanne Benton, Jason Robards, and Blood the Dog. You'll not find a more useful companion in a post-apocalyptic world than a telepathic dog with the ability to sniff out women. What our hero chooses to do with these women is not really above board, but the boy and his dog relationship here I find pretty interesting. most often man's best friend, I think Lassie and Timmy, right? Dogs are shown as lovable, loyal companions. That love is just a two-way street. The boy loves the dog loves the boy, or the girl loves the dog, whatever the case may be. But Blood and Vic have a much different relationship in this. It's antagonistic. It's almost like two dudes kind of making fun of each other and berating each other. And it sort of humanized Blood to a certain extent. And I think that adds maybe the tiniest bit of suspense for when Vic must choose between Blood and his new love interest, the devious Quilla. This movie does not really hold up very well in terms of its treatment of women. Not a good look. Not a good look at all. But this movie takes place in 2024. Yeah. So get ready. Telepathic dogs, mutants, and underground.
Feeding your girlfriend to your dog.
Spoiler alert. Yeah. That's just around the corner.
This one was high up my list. I'll make it my number four. I like this movie. I like the story of this movie more than I like the actual execution of the movie. This is one of those, I think the most in-depth I've talked about it is a long time ago. We did like, what movies do you want to see remade or what do you want to see rebooted? This is at the top of my list. I think we're due for a Boy and His Dog reboot. I think it'd be fascinating.
We could do with a little less rape.
No, without the rape.
Yeah,
that's what I mean.
Right.
Like,
that's,
we, yeah,
exactly. Yeah,
no, I'm not for the rape.
No.
But
for a version with much less
rape. A less
rapey yeah,
version. I
right.
think the story is fascinating. And it could be updated to be less, yeah.
The Fallout games that the kids are playing now, a lot of that was based on or in parts of this. You've got underground civilizations just trying to lure in surface dwellers. It's an interesting post-apocalyptic world. The dynamic between Vic and Blood, I think, is really good. The rape is tough.
Yeah, and I could do without that.
Yeah,
but
absolutely.
And even the ending, like, that's like, it's tough to make that ending. It sells the movie, though. Like, it's so those characters.
Yep.
But I just think it's one of those that the story could be updated.
There's no character arc for either of them.
No, the story could be updated, and I think there's a lot of room that you could do a lot of good stuff with it. This version is, it's enough to talk about in a dog movie.
My number four is a movie that we've already talked about this week. It is John Wick, Chapter 1 from 2014.
Genesis.
Directed by Chad Strahovski, starring Keanu Reeves, Michael Nyquist, Alfie Allen, Willem Dafoe, Ian McShane, and Daisy the dog. This is 100% a stupid gun-fu action movie directed by a stuntman led by Keanu Reeves, which somehow manages to pack a huge amount of feels into the first 15 minutes or so. In these revenge movies, which, make no mistake, that is what this is, we really have to feel the wrong that the character feels so that we're able to strap in with them for the rest of the movie and feel like everything they're about to do is okay. And in almost an Up-like fashion, Strahovski manages to get us fully invested in the Reeves-Bridget Moynihan marriage, and the feels that we assign to that marriage are perfectly transferred to Daisy. And of all the shit that Theon pulled in Westeros, perhaps the worst thing Alfie Allen has ever done on film was kill that dog. And because he did, all of the headshots that would follow seem totally justified, and that's really a credit to the writing and directing. They make you care about the motivations of the boogeyman, and it's a better movie for it. And in my opinion, that's why the sequel and perhaps Chapter 3 / Parabellum don't quite even up. It's not a man out to avenge the death of his dog and the theft of his car. It's just a continuation of the events of what happened after he was justifiably pissed.
Yeah, this was one of my also-rans. I didn't put it on because I thought maybe it was too on the nose. Number three, I tried to shoehorn Lost Boys on here because of the Nook. But in reality, you take the Nook out of that movie, like, yeah, it's got a bathtub kill. But really, the movie's no different if Corey Haim doesn't have a dog.
No.
So I can't consider the Nook central to the plot. But that got me on Corey Haim, werewolves are kind of dogs. Could I do Silver Bullet? But no, I have a better one. From 1988, directed by John Hess, based on the Dean R. Koontz novel, it is Watchers. Corey Haim finds a stray dog that happens to be genetically enhanced and super smart, and is being hunted down by evil scientists and a giant monster. It's a sci-fi boy meets dog movie. For 9-year-old me, when this movie came out, it was my everything. You know, I was the same age as Corey Haim, roughly. Like, I was into dogs and being hunted by genetically mutated monsters. Like, it was... This movie was...
It checked all the boxes.
It did. For 9-year-old me, I have not watched this movie since then. So I'm sure it's probably not good now. But the memories of this movie and what this movie meant to me at that moment in time puts it at number 3 on my list. Because the dog is very relevant.
I don't think I'm going to spoil any movies on your list, because this one would have been my number 1. But thinking along those lines, I was like, I can make the argument that without the husky from The Thing, we have no movie. And that was a dope-ass monster, the flower-faced dog. Holy shit, that is the stuff.
It's like a Demogorgon.
Yes, it does. Yes, it does. That is the stuff of nightmares right there. But I guess that could have been anything other than the dog. And do I really need to put The Thing on another list? No, I don't. So I didn't. But when you were talking about trying to shoehorn this dog sci-fi movie, like The Thing, and I was like, oh, Dog Soldiers, I could put that on there, but that's another
title.
One. Exactly, right. That's on the wet nose there. I thought we've talked enough about those that they could do without being on the list. We have not talked a bunch about my number 3. We talked about it maybe a little tiny bit during our Oscar preview. I don't think it made my end of the year list from last year. It is Wes Anderson's Isle of Dogs, starring an isle full of dogs. Bryan Cranston, Edward Norton, Bill Murray, Greta Gerwig. I understand the Wes Anderson fatigue that may be setting in for some people at this point. His stuff tends to have a very similar feel to it, similar pacing, and oftentimes it's similarly quirky, and that's kind of the draw. That's what a Wes Anderson movie is, and it relies pretty heavily on the quirk. And while Isle of Dogs is all that, it still manages to feel different from Grand Budapest, Moonrise Kingdom, some of the stuff he's done more recently. And yes, it is a stop-motion movie featuring talking animals, so you might think, oh, it's like Fantastic Mr. Fox or whatever.
Also a dog.
Yeah, I suppose. But what Isle of Dogs does, it actually focuses on the story, which we haven't seen Wes Anderson do in a while. It focuses less on, hey, look at me, this is a Wes Anderson dialogue. No, it's just about a story about a boy trying to find his dog and a dog trying to help the boy find his dog and the determination for the dog to make that a reality. It is a great reminder of why Anderson was able to fatigue people in the first place. It's because he is a really good storyteller when he allows the story to be the star and not Wes Anderson and getting in his own way. I also love the score that Alexander Desplat made for the movie. That was nominated for, I think, Best Original Score. The movie picked up a nomination for Best Animated Film. Never had a shot in hell at winning. But I kind of waited seeing this for a while because I was like, all right, maybe it is just more of the same from Anderson. But I do think it's a bit of a breath of fresh air.
My number 2 is a movie that I don't think we've talked about. I may have tried to sneak it in somewhere, but I don't remember where. From 2008, starring Miley Cyrus and John Travolta, it is Bolt. I really like this movie. I legit love this movie. My kids like it. I just rewatched it the other day because Kira was requesting it. John Travolta plays Bolt, a dog who stars on a TV show where he's got superpowers, but dogs are dummies, so he doesn't realize he's just an actor. And when he gets loose, he thinks he has all these superpowers, you dumb dog. And he's trying to save Miley Cyrus's Penny. Miley Cyrus is good. John Travolta is good. The birds. It's just a fun Disney animated movie that seems like it went under the radar. Like, it seems like it didn't make a mark like a lot of others do. It's not a musical. It's just a straightforward animated. It's not Pixar, so it's one of the maybe the one of the first. I'm not doing the history, but maybe one of the first.
We've done that before.
Yeah, maybe one of the first that they did without Pixar, or maybe it was, I don't know. I like Bolt. I really do. It's a fun movie. If you have kids, definitely watch it with them because they'll like it, and it's one of those that it's good enough that you're not going to hate it.
I would say my number two falls into that category as well. It is one of the first, I started thinking about movie dogs. It may have been the first one that popped into my mind, and it is The Beast from 1993's The Sandlot, directed by David Mickey Evans, starring a bunch of kids and The Beast. And The Sandlot is one of those movies that like you watch as a kid and it's great, and it still holds up. I'll catch it randomly on cable in the summers, and it's still, I think, just as good as it was 26 years ago. It's full of a ton of really memorable characters, and maybe none more memorable than The Beast. I was trying to remember, you got Smalls, obviously, you got Benny, but then I was like, what are the other kids' names? And I struggled, but The Beast is a character. Like, yeah, I remember The Beast. I remember that thing, like, the jaws on that thing, the giant paws on it, how they built this dog up to be just this mythical monster. And then, you know, when it came to actually meeting the dog and meeting blind James Earl Jones's character, who was almost painted as a villain as big as the dog, oftentimes when you're a kid, your perception of things is just so otherworldly. But after they are able to meet the Beast, he becomes like their mascot. And James Earl Jones becomes a guy that not only can he help them out of the pickle that they're in, so to speak, but he becomes a guy that they all come to like, which I thought was just fantastic the way they kind of dealt with that whole thing.
I've never seen it.
Really?
Yeah. It's one of those that it's just, I just never
missed
saw
it in 93.
Yeah. And I just, it wasn't the kind of movie I was watching in 93 and just haven't went back to it.
It is really good. I mean, this is going to sound like a crazy comparison, and in some respects, maybe it is. I think of like those summer movies, coming of age stories. Stand By Me is one that's always really high up there, and for good reason, because it is really, really good. I don't think that The Sandlot, it's much more of a comedy. You know, it doesn't deal with, you know,
there's no dead bodies that they're finding.
No. It doesn't deal with the same, like,
I
level.
I did see Stand By Me.
Sure. Of subject matter.
Love me some dead bodies.
Sure. But just the way that it shows all these kids kind of coming together, and then I really think it's a really good movie, and I don't think it's just nostalgia me, because I think I like it more the older I get and the more I watch. I didn't love it as a kid. I'm not a giant baseball guy anyway. I didn't grow up playing baseball outside with my friends, but I like the idea of having this foe, this nemesis like the Beast, and spending all summer trying to figure out how to, you know, whether it's the haunted house down the block or the old lady that's certainly got to be a witch or something. But then, you know, you just kind of meet that person and you find out that you're just being a dumb kid. I love that.
Yeah, and I think that's what it was. I wasn't watching these kind of movies when I was 14. Not a baseball guy, so in my head it's always just been like, oh, that's a baseball movie. It just never caught me. My number one may not seem like a dog movie to begin with, but it is based on a short story called Animal Rescue. The short story was written by Dennis Lehane, who also wrote the screenplay, directed by Michael R. Roskam, starring two of my favorite actors of, I'd say, of all time, probably. Tom Hardy and James Gandolfini. Throw in Noomi Rapace and Matthias Schoenaerts. It is The Drop from 2014. Yes, it's about Gandolfini and Tom Hardy running a bar that's run by the Chechnyan mob where they're doing illegal drops. It gets robbed and they are on the hook for replacing the money that was stolen. So that's
all of that is true.
That's the heart of it. Yes. But Tom Hardy finds a dog, leads him to Noomi Rapace, brings Eric Deeds into the picture. It makes this villain. It hooks up Gandolfini with Deeds. It brings out Deeds' backstory, which is very relevant to the bar, and the dog is very crucial to Tom Hardy's character arc in this movie, and it led to my favorite Google search, Tom Hardy dogs. lots of pictures. He loves himself a dog. I don't feel like I'm selling it, but to watch the movie and realize how crucial the dog is to the plot, to where the dog is kind of the thing that's bringing all of these people together that leads to everything that happens at the end. It's a dark movie.
It is.
There's not really anybody to root for.
The dog.
The dog, probably. You want him to find a good home away from all of these people. But it's a really, really good movie. One of the last Gandolfini roles on screen, this and that Julia Louis-Dreyfus, Nicole Hofstetter movie. I forget the name of it. It was really, really good, though. I love Gandolfini, and I love seeing him in these types of roles. And then Tom Hardy, I love, and Noomi Rapace. I just really love this movie. It was one of the first ones that came to mind, and I thought maybe I'd have to sell it, but really, the more I went to it, like, I mean, Dennis Lehane wrote it. It's called Animal Rescue, because him rescuing that pit bull leads everything else to happen. So, fuck you. It's my number one. It's my number one favorite dog movie, The Drop from 2014.
It is a really good movie. I have no particular qualms with it being number one on your list, and I'm not going to argue. I kind of remember the dog in it. Maybe I am downplaying. I probably am downplaying the significance of said dog.
Without the dog, he doesn't meet Noomi Rapace. He doesn't meet Deeds. Gandolfini doesn't meet Deeds. You don't get the backstory of the bar. Like, it's a lot there with that dog.
I'll give it to you. My number one.
Count it.
My number one. There's a bunch of dogs. Winky, Beatrice, Hubert, Rhapsody in White, and Miss Agnes in Christopher Guest's Best in Show from 2000, starring Jennifer Coolidge, Guest, Eugene Levy, and the aforementioned dogs. There's a ton of doggos in this movie, not just the quintet that I mentioned. And for the most part, they play the straight roles opposite their human counterparts. And aside from Spinal Tap, which Guest wrote, Best of Show sticks out to me as like prime Christopher Guest. The premise and the overimportance that all the characters place on the premise, as well as the general tomfoolery that ensue, is Christopher Guest. I don't think it's a stretch to say we don't have, not that the world would be that much worse off without Pitch Perfect, but we don't have Pitch Perfect without Christopher Guest movies. And like Elizabeth Banks and the whole commentary team, that's lifted right out of Best in Show. Perhaps the comedy is narrow. I mean, for the two of us in this room, that's right smack dab in the middle of our sense of humor. I love his stuff. I mean, it is slapsticky to a certain extent, but I do think it's smart, and somehow it's underseen. We talk a fair, Dave mentions Guffman a lot, which is another Christopher Guest. I think it might be his first directed movies that he did. And I think we hold his stuff in a pretty high esteem, but for some reason, it doesn't come up an awful lot. But, you know, I'll watch a movie, even like Butter. That has come up a couple times recently. Did Jennifer Garner.
Wild.
And that premise seems like it ought to be Christopher Guest, because he's done so well with these kind of like super niche topics, but treating them as if they are the most serious thing in the world. Nobody does it better. And I think that we see a lot of movies like that because of what Guest does.
Yeah, this one, when I was first doing the list, this was one that was like on my radar and it was going to be high because I love this movie. But for some reason, when I wrote my list down, it's not there at all. And I completely forgot about it until you said something. It's my favorite of the Guest-directed movies. I think it's the most accessible, because like Guffman is very theater nerdy. Your Consideration is also, people like The Dog Show. Even people that don't care about The Dog Show,
it
like,
gets huge numbers.
They understand the importance of The Dog Show. So I think this is the most accessible one. The cast is great. It's very, very funny. I love this movie, and I'm mad I didn't have it on mine. So I'm glad you put it on there. It would have bumped my number five off for sure. But so, hey, bonus movie.
I didn't have a ton of also-rans. I mean, you know, there's Cujo and the Costco Cujo, Man's Best Friend
with Ali Sheedy.
Yeah, and Lance Henriksen that comes to mind. You know, there's the family stuff, Beethoven. There's
Hotel for Dogs with Emma Roberts. And that's when I really thought, like, oh, Emma Roberts is a star. Like, she was young in that movie, but like she carried that movie. She had a lot of the charisma her aunt does. Yeah, I had John Wick, Hotel for Dogs, Cujo, All Dogs Go to Heaven.
Yeah.
Balto, Turner and Hooch, and Lost Boys. Squeezing it in at least as an also-ran.
No mention of the Air Bud movies. There's quite a lot of those
the Buddies movies
to choose from. Space Buddies. Yes, which is where I was going. A long way to get there.
Oh, hey.
Yes.
I know where you're going now.
Yes. Space Buddies was dogs in space.
We would consider a realistic space movie?
Perhaps, yes, which will be our topic for next week. Ad Astra comes out, and that is being billed as a very realistic portrayal of what space travel might actually be like. So we're going to give our favorite realistic space movies. It'll be interesting to try and weed out what we think is realistic in terms of space travel. I guess we're not going to be doing like Star Wars. That's not exactly realistic.
Star Wars, Alien. I mean, Alien could be realistic.
I'd make the argument that it is. Right. It's probably aliens.
I mean, you know what my number one's going to be. It's shining bright today, but I guess this will be up for interpretation.
Yeah, which means we're probably going to have vastly different lists, which I always think is fun because there's a much better likelihood that we'll end up talking about maybe 10 movies as opposed to a list that we have an awful lot of crossover. But to find out what we think realistic space travel is like, come back next week. But until then,
keep it up to the stars.